As we begin the season of Advent, we want to recall that Advent is really about the three comings of Christ. His coming in Jesus 2,000 years ago, his coming again at the end of time, and his coming today in our hearts. And the liturgy and the scriptures and the church's tradition really don't parcel those out all that carefully. It's all kind of meshed together because God is timeless, because God exists outside of time, and so all time is now. And so is Christ coming from the past? Is he coming from the future? Yes, both. And so we begin the Advent season kind of backwards. It ends with his first coming, but it starts with his last coming. And so we read this gospel about the end, about the stars colliding and you know, everything catastrophically coming apart, and the Son of Man coming on the clouds of heaven, you know. And there's something fearful about that in one way, but Jesus ends that gospel passage by saying, when these things begin to happen, stand erect, for your redemption is at hand. And isn't it strange how catastrophe and tragedy and loss and failure and death happen almost simultaneously with resurrection and glory and redemption? A good example is Jeremiah in that first reading. The last 13 verses before this passage we heard this morning, he's proclaiming doom. He's predicting the exile. And he's saying, it's because of your injustice, because of your sin, that this catastrophe is falling upon you. And then his tone changes immediately. And he's talking about a just shoot will sprout from the stump of Jesse. You know, in other words, reign of God through David that was so filled with hope and promise but died off generations ago, and the kingdom split, and now we're going to be exiled into Babylon, and in the midst of that darkness he's saying a new life will come out of this death, and you, O Israel, will be called God our justice. Five verses before this, he's saying, you're so unjust. And now he's saying, your name will be God our justice. How does Jeremiah justify those two opposites? I think it's because Jeremiah was a man of deep prayer. And one of the things that led him into such deep prayer was he lived a kind of a tragic life. His job, it seemed to be, was to proclaim doom and failure, to point up people's sin. Who wants to hear that? And so nobody liked Jeremiah. He was a lonely man, suffered psychologically and spiritually, but that led him into hope. Hope is the season of Advent. And hope never comes cheap. Hope only comes when the situation is hopeless. You never know what hope is until the catastrophe has hit so hard and you've hit such rock bottom that you don't have any way out. And then you begin to see the light that comes from God, not from your own resources, but from God. There's an old philosophical fable about a tree with two birds in it. And in the upper branches is this golden bird who is sitting there kind of basking in his own glory. And most of the way down the tree in the lower branches, there's another bird, and he is busily eating the fruit. And every once in a while, he gets bad fruit. And it tastes nasty in his mouth. And he looks up at the other bird and he hops up a few branches. And then he's busily eating again, and he runs across some more bad fruit, and it's bitter in his mouth. And he looks up at the other bird, and he jumps up a few more branches. And so the story goes on. And eventually, that bird gets to the top branch. And there he realizes that all along there haven't been two birds, but only one. He is that golden bird, basking in his own glory. That's us. You see, we have one foot in this world and one foot in the kingdom. We have our lowly human nature that obsesses and worries and tries to save ourselves and works endlessly getting nowhere. But we also have a divine side to us, created in God's image. And those of us who are kind of locked in time and locked in the busyness of this world also are capable of infinity. And so Jeremiah, the reason he can get so obsessed with all the darkness around him and yet see the light is because he's tapped into the fact that he's both of those birds in one. And so are we. And so when we get distressed, when catastrophe comes falling around us, we resort to prayer. And sometimes we feel guilty because we think, well, I shouldn't even be praying now because I haven't prayed for a couple of weeks and now I'm calling on God. Don't worry about that. Just do it, you know. God always wants our prayer. God always wants us to get in touch with that golden side of ourselves. He wants us to recognize our divinity. He wants us to trust in that light. And that's what's going to get us through our darkest hours. Not our own resources, not our worry or any of those things, but God. When we celebrate Eucharist, we are celebrating the memory of Jesus, who was God, but took on our lowly human nature and lived it out the same way we do. Stressing, being persecuted, experiencing failure and loss, his disciples sometimes walking away from him, the Romans spitting upon him and crowning him with thorns, the chief priests angrily crying, "Crucify him," and he takes up his cross. Jesus, who is so in touch with both sides, the humanity and the divinity in his being, is willing to take up the cross and cry out at the end of his life, "Father, into your hands I commend my spirit." That's the Son of Man who came 2,000 years ago, and he's the same one who is coming to us from the future, the Son of Man. The Lamb of God, risen victorious over death because he was willing to take up the cross. There was a second century unknown author, a theologian, who said, "Happy are they who have recognized their future in the cross of Christ and have plunged themselves into the water of rebirth." Well, that's our story, isn't it? What saves us is that we recognize in the cross a certain glory. The rest of the world would say, "Oh, that's failure and loss and death, and who wants to go there?" But we make the sign of the cross before every prayer. And we make our sign of the cross as we immerse ourselves, plunge ourselves into those waters over and over again, because the waters of death are also the waters of rebirth. And Eucharist recalls all that and celebrates that, but it also beckons to that future glory, because this is the meal of the kingdom, the heavenly banquet of which we are partaking in advance this morning. Time collapses. Glory and indignity come together. The golden bird and the one gorging on fruit come together. They're one. Humanity and divinity come together as one. In the same way that they were one in Jesus, they may also be one in us.